I'm joined today by Jane Kirkpatrick, author of An Absence So Great. Now, Jane has a unique voice in the historical fiction genre. Now, tell me why you decided to share the story of your grandmother, Jessie Ann Gabel.
Well, I've been writing historical novels, kind of biographical novels, I call them, based on the lives of actual people for a number of years now. And my grandmother's story had long appealed to me. She was a photographer at the turn of the century in Minnesota, and then was trained to travel around the Northwest, but it's actually now we think of it as the Midwest, to run both the creative side of photographic studios and the business side while the proprietors were recovering from mercury poisoning. And they would get poisoning from the chemicals that were involved in developing the photographs. So that was her job, and I just found that really intriguing that she began that work when she was 15. And, you know, I loved her dearly, and I admired her. You know, I knew her in her later life, and, of course, admired her perseverance, her endurance, and her great faith, and how she relied on her faith in very difficult times. And so I just wanted to tell her story and maybe discover some things about myself in the process.
Now, the title of your new novel, as I referred to, is An Absence So Great. Can you give me some insight into what the title reflects about the story?
Well, the title comes from a one line of poetry by Mark Doty, who gave us permission to use it as a little front matter. And it was written about the time of a person having lost a child. And he had written it to someone saying, you know, how could I have prepared for an absence so large as you? And we adapted a little bit to be an absence so great. And in part, this is a story about loss and about how people grieve differently from losses. And sometimes they make poor decisions and sometimes they isolate themselves. And I wanted to talk about that great separation that we have when we are dealing with loss. But the larger separation I wanted to explore was what happens when people distance themselves from God and from the strength of their faith, and how hard we may try to fill that absence up. And there only really is one way to fill it, and that is through the love of Jesus Christ and through the love of God caring for us. And so I wanted to explore that through her life, where she had some losses and she had some periods when I speculate that she felt very absent from her God and how she made her way back.
Now, in exploring Jessie's life and passions, how do you believe she felt about her pursuit of her photography in such a revolutionary and critical period for women taking on new careers?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I don't think she would have seen herself as making a big splash, you know, as a woman in a man's world. I think it was a job that she found she had both a gift for and an ability to do and a passion for looking at photographs, taking photographs, and kind of studying the world and relationships through photographs. But she never told any of us that she owned her own studio by the time she was 20. And I found that out as I was doing the research and came across the fact that a newspaper article saying that she had purchased the studio and was the new proprietor. And that just intrigued me, and it made me think that wasn't necessarily in her later life something she saw as being particularly significant, that what she saw as really being significant, I think, was the way in which she, in her later life, blended two families because her husband had been previously married and he had children. And so it was at the turn of the century to deal with those issues, I think, would have said more about her character. I think she liked traveling. She often talked about traveling. But I don't think, she certainly wouldn't have seen herself as a feminist of any kind, but she loved the idea of being independent and of making her own way.
Now, Jessie is caught in a tug of war between emotions that she knows are very unwise and rational choices to remove herself from dangerous situations. How do you believe this struggle is relevant for most women, regardless of demographics or even the period in history?
Well, I think part of what intrigued me about her story is that very often creative people, both men and women, and we look at their gifts and we say, oh, they're so talented and so gifted, and then they will make decisions that from the outside we're looking at saying, well, why would you do that? That's so stupid. and almost sabotage themselves. And I, in my own life, as a woman who had been in a career, one of the things I realized is how you really have to guard against subtle intrusions into what you hope will be your goal and your standard in life. Working closely with married men, for example, if you're a single woman or if you're a married woman, or working closely with, becoming really enamored with a particular mentor and perhaps not being discriminating about the advice that that mentor might give or the way in which that person's life might play out. I think those are all struggles that go on today for people who are in the workforce, but also relationships can get out of hand, even in everyday life, and being really vigilant, I guess is the word, to be aware of how our emotions are shifting, and that often if we find ourselves intrigued by someone of the opposite sex who is not our spouse, that's a sign that something is happening within the primary relationship, and we need to turn back to see what we can do to restore that relationship.
Now, Jane, it's no secret that readers of your novels always find themselves transported to a particular setting because of your close attention to sense of place and time. How do you capture all those tiny details of the period, and what places should readers of An Absence So Great expect to discover?
Well, you'll laugh, but I travel a lot to museums, and I try to get the sense of place by going to the places I write about and imagining what it would have been like 100 years ago. But I also spend a lot of time on eBay, which may sound really bizarre. I don't buy much on eBay. I have a sister-in-law who is our eBay queen, and she supports my writing by seeking things out for me. But it's such a great way to go and look at, for example, my grandmother, we believed, had gone to the St. Louis World's Fair, and I had a little glass that had her name on it from the time period. So I wondered what else might have gone on at St. Louis World's Fair. And you can find just dozens of tourist items that were available. And on eBay, there are people who are passionate about that. And so I could purchase some of those detailed items and at least see them. And otherwise, I might have had to travel to many, many museums or try to figure out who on earth is passionate about old photographer material or the St. Louis World's Fair of 1904. So it gives me an opportunity to see those things, and very often those items make their way into the plot. I was able to access some magazines from 1907, which is when my grandmother started work as a photographer, and see what was advertised and what people were thinking about, and read the articles in these magazines. So that's all part of how I hope the story becomes a place where people can go to another time. And in this book, they'll be visiting not only Winona, Minnesota, and Minneapolis, but they'll be going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and to Eau Claire, and to Bismarck, North Dakota, because those were all places where she made her way running studios. And as she was running studios, she was also running away from some very powerful emotions that she had to come to terms with.
Well, let's hope we don't end up in a bidding war on eBay with with Jane Kirkpatrick, the author of An Absence So Great. Jane, thanks again for your time, and look forward to the book.
Thank you very much.